You are listening to the PYD Lab, the podcast for implementers and young leaders who want to examine innovative approaches to positive youth development and hear stories of young people leading change in their communities. This podcast is made possible by the support of the American people through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID. The content and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of USAID or the United States government.
Hey, it's Natasha, and you're in the PYD Lab. Today, we are talking about digital literacy, a subject I find fascinating. There's so many components to it, such as access to information, digital harm, and data governance. So today we're spending some time in the lab with digital transformation analyst, Stefan Lewis. Stefan works for the Ministry of Digital Transformation in Trinidad and Tobago. A reminder that these are the ideas and thoughts of me and Stefan and do not necessarily reflect the views of USAID or the United States government. Stefan, welcome.
Hi, thank you, Natasha. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you today about digital literacy. For me, when I first began working on the YP2LE activity and with YouthLead, that was the first time that I was exposed to the concept of digital harm and the deeper components of digital literacy. What was your first window into this work?
My first window into this work was from the Ministry of Digital Transformation. I started working the digital harm when I actually went to conference in Romania. I partook in the International Telecommunication Union's plenipotentiary, which is basically a UN organization that specifically for governing ICT and technology and the internet. ICT is information and communication technology. So they have a conference every 4 years to discuss among the members around the different aspects of ICT. So I participated in an ad hoc group for cybersecurity where discussion for online protection of children came up. So I asked myself, you know, what are we actually saving children from? And from my research, I came across the topic of digital harm, and it really piqued my interest. Digital harm is any type of destructive behavior to oneself or others through any digital outlet. So it ranges from cyberbullying, phishing, scams, online blackmailing, and even grooming of young children through the internet to be susceptible to human trafficking. So because of the increase of digital inclusion and the internet penetration that we were speaking about earlier, which was spurred across by COVID-19, there was an evident increase in all aspects of digital harm. So since people were new to the internet and did not have any proper awareness of the dangers online, we saw that this stuff is happening a lot. Mm-hmm. So with regards to data governance, it's basically a set of policies that define how an organization or a country manages or governs data. So like the data's availability, quality, and security through the different policies and standards. With regards to data governance, I got into data governance through the ITU as well. They had a consultant that worked in Trinidad on a project at MDT, which is the Ministry of Digital Transformation. And because I knew data would essentially become the next oil, I thought it was necessary that it should be governed in a certain way, which is safe and secure and usable in compliance with internal and external policy and standards. That's really my introduction into digital harm and data governance. I also became interested in digital literacy through the ministry as well, because I understood that there must be some level of capacity building.
So how is some of this showing up in your day-to-day work as an analyst? Like, what are some of the things that you're working on and executing in your role?
Just to give a little background of the Ministry of Digital Transformation, which will link into the question. The Ministry of Digital Transformation is a government ministry. As the name suggests, we are mandated to... So we have three pillars, which we do this by, digital society, digital economy, and digital government, which have all specific roles and projects. For example, developing electronic identification, having government services occur seamlessly online, free public Wi-Fi, and even allowing citizens the opportunity to improve their digital skills, like I said before. So my role at MDT is a digital transformation analyst in the external relations unit. So basically, I work with a team that liaises with regional and international organizations to further the project and the mandate that I spoke about earlier. So we have to be knowledgeable in many different aspects of the field of ICT to see where the benefit lies. So we have to look at trends within the technology space and research into countries and organizations where we could collaborate. So it's a mixture of policy and diplomacy.
Yeah, and a part of that work, like you mentioned, is, you know, working on behalf of the citizens. Could you tell us a little bit about digital inclusion and the current state of internet access?
With respect to digital harm can affect marginalized and vulnerable communities who may lack the awareness or resources or even the skills to protect themselves online. So by promoting digital inclusion, we empower these communities to kind of understand and navigate the potential risks more effectively. So this involves, you know, providing access to digital literacy, teaching online safety practices, and offering support for individuals who are more susceptible to being cyberbullied or scammed. With respect to data governance, digital inclusion plays an important part to ensure that data policies and practices are designed to protect privacy rights of every individual, regardless of their level of digital literacy or status. With regards to internet penetration in Trinidad, the internet access and internet penetration is 77 to 85%. So it's relatively high compared to the average in the region, as it has been increasing the last couple of years with the introduction of new technologies such as satellites that actually distribute broadband and internet, and the introduction of also new infrastructural improvements in the country. But of course, we have a level of disparity between the rural and urban areas, where the rural areas do not have as much access. And this is mainly due to the terrain and the difficulty to develop the infrastructure there. So, but we do, however, have specific technology like TV white spaces that's basically specific for the area or areas with tricky terrain to allow internet access.
I want to keep on this conversation of infrastructure and access, particularly for young children to be able to receive the training and the skills that they need to be able to enter, you know, a competitive job market in the future, where we know a lot of jobs now, and definitely as we continue on, will be tied to some sort of technology. How are youth being, you know, trained and acquiring the skills there? And is there a gap?
At the moment, yes, there are gaps, mainly because digital transformation is pretty new to Trinidad and Tobago. We started in 2021, so the ministry was built in 2021. And we're now starting to roll out these specific type of initiatives to increase the digital capacity of the youth. So in Trinidad, there are various projects that target youth to be able to upgrade themselves, to upskill. So we have a platform that is under production right now to offer a range of courses with regards to digital literacy at different levels. So there'll be different groups to kind of reduce the gap with regards to digital skills. In the future, everything's going to have some level of technology intertwined with it. So we recognize that it is important to start at a very young age, to start the training. So it will be a part of the culture. So it's basically a culture shift that's going to happen. But we are seeing a lot of progress occurring. So that's the plan that's going to occur with regards to the digital skills and training the kids to be able to use technology in their everyday life.
That's great. That's an interesting idea about creating a platform like that, young people being able to access this technology in their everyday life, which leads back to the discussion about when you had talked a little bit about phishing scams and digital harm and online safety. What are you seeing, particularly like at the level that you're working at? Do you have like any tips around like online safety and phishing scams?
Because of the introduction of AI, you see a growth in these scams and stuff like that. And I will always say that there are always pros and cons to almost anything in life and on the internet. That is the reason why I believe that there should be some level of governance and to be able to amplify the advantages and minimize the disadvantages. It is a trend that's occurring where a lot of people are using the AI to be able to do these type of things. I remember one instance that there was a woman, a grandmom, that got it's a video from her granddaughter who was pleading and begging, grandmom, I'm trapped somewhere and I need you to send me $20,000 to be able to get out of it. And it was so real. It looked just like her. It sounded just like her. So of course the grandmom would send me money. And then after when she realized it was a scam, I think it would have tricked anybody. So it's very, very scary. There are also scams where they pretend to be a job opportunity. So they kind of target individuals that look for jobs. They somehow get your information. You have to be so careful online on the type of information you put forward. So they get your information and they tailor a job for you. And they tell you that, you know, in order to get the job, you have to pay X amount of money. Think stuff like that. But again, it's the awareness of these stuff. That is how you actually put an end to it. So being able to educate people and share your story. So a lot of individuals have been coming forward who have been scammed like this. And they have been coming forward, sharing their stories, raising awareness so people can actually learn from it and be able to spread the message.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, the story that you just shared about like the grandmother, with these apps, you know, that you can just put on a filter and look like someone else. I mean, it's shocking.
Very shocking. There are also instances where it could kind of affect someone's character because some of these apps, you can literally take a picture and then after edit the picture in such a way to make a video of someone doing something that they did not do. So you can understand the kind of implications that could have. Again, you have to be very careful of the information, the pictures, and stuff you're putting out there. Even some parents with their kids, you know, sometimes parents will take pictures of their kids, put it on Facebook and on social media without actually understanding that you're actually putting your children at risk because someone can easily take these pictures.
So true. Oh my goodness. I definitely wanted to get your take on internet regulation and government policy. How do we protect people without killing their freedoms?
That is a question that's actually being debated on the international arena as we speak. Navigating the balance between internet regulation and preserving the individual freedoms is a very complex challenge, and it requires a lot of consideration because, you know, the digital age has brought with it opportunities for communication, expression, and innovation. But it also has raised concerns about privacy, misinformation, and other digital harm. So I think that striking a balance between protecting people from harm and upholding the fundamental principles of free expression and privacy is the way forward. I think this requires ongoing dialogue in a multi-stakeholder arena. It requires openness to different perspectives and a commitment to crafting policy. I believe also regulation should be clear and well-defined since, you know, vague and overly broad regulations could lead to unintended consequences and actually hinder the freedom of expression.
It's true. I think there's always that fine line between expressing yourself, but while you're expressing yourself, making sure that you're not like violating other people's rights. You know, we talked about the rise of AI and ethical tech use, but I wanted to get your thoughts on ethical tech use coming from us as individuals, right? And I'm not talking about dark things like trafficking or scams, but with the rise of artificial intelligence, I think we as human beings have a responsibility to use technology ethically, right? What are your thoughts around that in terms of us as individuals and our responsibilities to make sure that the information that we're communicating is ethically shared and done in a way that it's delivered with care and intention?
It begs the question that who decides what's ethical and what's not?
So true.
That for one person using ChatGPT or using AI to would increase production in their life. It'll be more efficient. That would be the best for them. But other individuals might think that it's spurring some type of lazy mentality or lazy behavior, and it may not work for them as well. It depends on the individual. It depends on what is ethical. Apart from, of course, the extremity of phishing and these type of voiceovers and deepfakes and stuff like that. Apart from that, who decides what is ethical? And it kind of begs to the question of deregulation with regards to AI. Is there an international regulations or governance around AI to be able to let people know what is ethical and what is non-ethical? We haven't seen that. So, and I think things will be a lot more clearer when there's that level of governance with regards to AI.
Yeah, it's so true. And so a lot of this stuff, as the technology is being created, it's also affecting other industries, obviously, and legalities. And it's just an interesting thing to see kind of unfold in real time.
It's just a matter of time until it gets fleshed out. I know that there's a lot of work specific to the AI governance.
I definitely, before we get into your PYD recommendations, want to ask you about your work on the Digital Youth Council. Could you tell us a little bit about the council and some of the work that you're doing there?
The Digital Youth Council is a 12-member council of young leaders from across the globe who are focused on issues related to digital platforms and safety, and who are actually interested in reducing digital harm. And it's a program that is supported by the USAID, Youth Power. The Digital Youth Council really was the gasoline to the fire of my interest in digital harm. It really deepened my understanding of the various types and how it has been affecting not just my country or the Caribbean, but the entirety of the globe from the various insights of my peers on the council. We have discussions, and we went through, you know, possible solutions such as, you know, proper awareness, you know, education of the digital harm, and even creation of networks dedicated just for preventing digital harm. The Digital Youth Council also gives us access to their mentors who are available to assist in our own personal development. So it's not just about digital harm alone. It's about our holistic development as individuals, as professionals in different fields. So I met a mentor who is actually within the field of data governance, and we do check-ins and we have very in-depth discussion on how to grow within that field and, you know, and expand my knowledge on the field, you know, because you'll always continuously have to upskill in technology. So the Digital Youth Council is a really, really powerful tool in that to really push these different topics to actually bring awareness to not just us, not just the 12 of us in the council, but to the communities that we take charge of, the organizations that we are part of. You know, even in our family life, our families and friends, to be able to spread that knowledge that we are actually getting on the Digital Youth Council, to be able to make a better society.
Oh, I love that. And I love that there's a special component when you can learn from one another and yes, together at the same time. Yes. It's really nice. And that piece about it being global, you know, so you're like, you don't feel so alone. You're like, oh, that's happening to you too. Me too. You know, yes. Like, but I didn't know that the Digital Youth Council had a mentoring component. That's awesome.
Of course, yes, they do. And first of all, the mentors are experts in the field. That's an amazing thing. Also, they have something called peer mentors. So the cohort that was before us, they actually come back and mentor us. So you're learning from the experts, you're learning from your peers. It's an amazing, amazing experience. And it has definitely shaped a lot of how and my passion with regards to digital harm and data governance itself.
Awesome. Now we're going to break it down and get into your PYD recommendations. This is the segment of the show where the guest talks to us a little bit about a published resource that they recommend on a youth development related topic. It could be a book, article, report, and why. a resource or project you know of that is authored or led by a young leader that you want others to know about and why. And last but not least, D stands for disrupt, a disruptive, innovative idea, project, or resource that does or will tackle a youth-related challenge. So let's kick it off with P, published.
The published source that I recommend is an article called Children at Increased Risk of Harm Online During Global COVID-19 Pandemic. And I always encourage kids or youth in general to read this article. Like the title states, it was published during COVID-19 by the United Nations International Children Emergency Fund, or UNICEF, together with various partners who released this article and a technical note aimed at urging governments and educators and even parents and the kids themselves to be alert. You know, I spoke about that earlier, you know, a deep understanding of when you're putting out your data, what it means. You know, so they want parents and the kids themselves to be alert to ensure that their online experience are safe and positive. So, of course, this occurred because of the increase of the online space and the incidence of online harm. Gives an introduction of digital harm and some simple ways to solve them and augment the development of the youth to be able to be safe and diligent of their online presence, you know, to be able to avoid and educate others about digital harm.
Awesome. What's a resource or project you know of that's authored or led by a young leader that you want others to know about?
So I actually want to speak about a project that was founded by a youth by the name of Keegan Patrick. The company itself is called Obotronics. So Obotronics is a Caribbean-based company that specializes in providing solutions to complex technical problems. And they provide services across a wide variety of fields, ranging from some software development, engineering consultancy, and STEM education. So they work with students, early stage founders, multinational companies, and even governments. I wanted to highlight this because this project, because he's a young adult who created a team who is passionate about upskilling in the digital space and actually followed through. So through their work, they could stand as a testament of the perseverance. And I think that it could serve as a lesson to that youth should put aside any fear or anxiety to go after a goal that they are passionate about. You know, this company worked with governments to make a difference in the Caribbean community and has a goal to become international. So, you know, I just want to inspire the youth to dream big and work towards their goals.
I love that. Yeah. Last but not least, D for disrupt. What's a disruptive, innovative idea or project or resource that does or will tackle a youth-related challenge? What you got?
Again, I want to highlight Obotronics because they are doing so much that it kind of spills over into the disrupt as well, because they have an education project called the Obotronics Digital Literacy that tackles the problem of the lack of digital literacy and awareness for opportunities within the digital arena. So they curated several programs to address the lack of awareness in the Caribbean youth. So they engage the youth from 16 to 35. So it's a pretty wide range. And they teach them about AI and use AI properly and safely, cybersecurity, robotics, emerging e-commerce tools. They also even encourage students to go on to create businesses and win awards, national awards. And that's why I love it so much, because they actually make individuals want to represent their country at international competitions with regards to robotics, and really helping develop the young mind. So I really, really love this initiative. I cannot wait for it to become international, because I know for sure they'll be able to benefit the entirety of society.
Thank you so much for coming in the lab today, Stefan. It's a pleasure learning about your work and just getting, you know, a little glimpse of some of your ideas and some of the disruptive things that you're following.
Yes, it was wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
And now we're going to get into our PYD recommendations.
Our first recommendation is the Digital Inclusion Starter Kit. It includes resources on how young changemakers can learn about digital safety and digital skills as tools for positive digital development and transformation. Our next recommendation is the webinar titled Youth and Digital Rights in the MENA Region with guest speakers Salam Shebly and Noah Ghali of VMO. This webinar was hosted by the MENA Community of Practice at youthpower.org. And it also includes the presentation slides from the webinar that take a deeper dive into reducing the digital divide and digital inclusion of vulnerable communities. Our final recommendation is UNESCO's 2023 Global Education Monitoring Report. This resource advocates learner-centric tech decisions. It provides factors that policymakers must consider, like context, equity, evidence, and sustainability. The report emphasizes balancing tech and human connection, focusing on outcomes, and the idea that tech should complement, not replace, teachers. As you know, these resources and a host of others are available at any time of the day at youthpower.org/PYDLab. Until next time, I'm Natasha, and you've been in the PYD Lab.